Well, good morning, and it is very good to be with you again. I am not on my regular rotation, which has been be at Balmoral in the summer months, and I haven't been, and I have, in my life, stepped away from Mount Carmel, as most of you will know, and I do want to just take a quick moment and acknowledge that I worked at Mount Carmel for 25 years, and probably every month of those 25 years, Balmoral contributed to our support. We are very, very grateful for that. Thank you so much for your ongoing care for us financially, but also in the emotional support, the care, and the concern that so often you as a congregation expressed. And I'm grateful for all of that and grateful for the history. This is the place that shaped me as a child. This is the place that helped my faith blossom and come to life as a young adult. You know, it's in this strange thing where Terry came to Balmoral when I was 18 and had a very significant role to play, and it's so fun to see him back here and to still be connected. And all of those things have just been very shaping to me, and I am grateful, and I think coming back and getting to speak reminds me of the significance of how people start life and reminds me of the significant role you have played. And it's over the years, I've had the privilege to just regularly be reminded that people shape us, and I have been shaped in so many good ways here. But I have moved into a new, unknown, uncertain phase of life. And throughout the summer months, I was kind of just breathing. And on the side, I've operated a lawn care business for a lot of years and have employees. Currently have one employee. And so I've just stepped into that a lot more throughout the fall. I kept thinking, yeah, next week I'll probably have time to apply for a job. Next week I should do that. And then, like, whatever, it doesn't happen. And so I'm going to spend the winter doing snow removal. I've got, you know, I've been provided very well by God with the opportunity to have a contract that'll kind of anchor us, and we're good. We'll make it go. There will be some bad snow days. I always thought of snow days as good, right? Snow days are going to suck. But there's just lots of goodness in life. And one of the things that I got to do early this fall, actually the first week of school, right as Mount Carmel started and public schools all started, I went on a backpacking trip with a couple friends. And we went to Jasper National Park, Robson Park area, Moose River Lake Trail. And as we were hiking for the 6 days, we kept reminding ourselves, where did we camp the first night? Because you'd start to forget, because you'd been on a few more. And what happened at noon the first day? Because we're old, and we figured, it's going to go. We're gonna forget. And so we were repeating to ourselves the things we did. And one of my friends, who's a millennial, he's younger than me, but old enough he forgets, was doing a video and kept, you know, talking into his camera and telling what we were doing. And then he created a video. And when we got back, he took all our pictures and he created a memory book. Because we'll forget. It'll be gone. And it's not just age that does that. It's human nature. That the next thing comes and things pile on, and you know, the day after we got back from that backpacking trip, I was on to the next thing, and that was history. And so I have this memory book that I was going to bring to prove to you that I actually did the trip, but I forgot it. Because we need to build markers in. I have so many memories that I can't pull out. And I'm not one of those storyteller people that can start telling stories and just keep talking and just keep pulling them out, because I don't remember them. And so I have to take action to remember. I have to have a memory book, and I have to have a video, and I have to have mementos of things. Not because it's just little garbage, but because I need to remember. My wife Shauna is currently in Scotland with her sister. They've had a long-time plan to travel together to the place, the community where their grandfather came from. And so yesterday and today, they were there doing the exploration of their heritage. But she'll come back with some mementos, and she's been sending pictures. And there will be markers of this time because we forget. I forget commitments. I woke up this morning and my phone said, I have a commitment tonight at 7:30 to meet someone. It was gone, man. Thank you, technology. I also have a commitment before that to watch my daughter's soccer game that I do remember. But I forget commitments. I remember as a kid being told, if you want to remember something, tie a string on your finger. Because then you'd say, what's the string there for? And you'll remember. And I'd probably just play with the string and untie it and lose it and it'd be gone. But we do things to try to remember. And making changes is difficult because I forget the changes I want to make. So it's part of human nature to forget and to wander in our commitments and to say, I'm going to start a fitness program next week. I'm going to eat differently, and then I forget to shop differently. And so we just wander around in life. We're in the book of Joshua. And God has stepped in to these people's lives in radical, powerful, unforgettable, maybe, ways. But these people, as we pick up the story in Joshua, they have a history. They were slaves. They knew how to live as slaves. They knew how to function in Egypt. They knew how to make their bricks. They knew what they had to do. And they would have been comfortable with that life. Their people had been there 400 years. That was life. And then God has stepped in. And he brought them out, invited them and called them and challenged them to become a model of living a new way of life, living with a new king, living with a new God. And so they have to learn to live this new way. And they've been given the Ten Commandments by the time we pick up the story in Joshua. They've wandered in the wilderness. They've experienced God's work in real and powerful ways. But experiencing things isn't enough. I have to mark memories. I have to mark myself and remind myself of my commitments and who I am. So as we pick up in Joshua 8, verses 30 to 35, they've just experienced two significant events. They have now entered the promised land. And the first significant event they experienced was the defeat of Jericho. God's radical provision of power and the ability to take over a city from an enemy. And they celebrated that victory. And then the second event was a crushing defeat at the town of Ai. Because there had been disobedience in the camp. There had been wandering. There had been a forgetfulness. And so they have suffered this defeat. And then God had given them victory as they had repented and solved the issue in the camp. And then the story stops. And the progression of things stops. And there's this pause in the action where we're told about a ritual. About an activity that took time to enact. There's a battle to be won. There's a land to be taken over. But they stop. And they remind themselves through this ritual of who their God is. And it's really a liturgy, a practice that anchors them. I would be thinking, we have a war to fight. We have enemies to defeat. We have people, things, we got to go. And they stop. So read with me in Joshua chapter 8, starting at verse 30. Then Joshua built on Mount Ebal an altar to the Lord, the God of Israel, as Moses, the servant of the Lord, had commanded the Israelites. He built it according to what is written in the book of the law of Moses, an altar of uncut stones on which no iron tool had been used. On it, they offered to the Lord burnt offerings and sacrificed fellowship offerings. There, in the presence of the Israelites, Joshua copied on stones the law of Moses, which he had written. All the Israelites, with their elders, officials, and judges, were standing on both sides of the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, facing the Levitical priests who carried it. Both the foreigners living among them and the native-born were there. Half of the people stood in front of Mount Gerizim, and half of them in front of Mount Ebal, as Moses, the servant of the Lord, had formerly commanded when he gave instructions to bless the people of Israel. Afterward, Joshua read all of the words of the law, the blessings and the curses, just as it is written in the book of the law. There was not a word of all that Moses had commanded that Joshua did not read to the whole assembly of Israel, including the women and children and the foreigners who lived among them. They're in the midst of a military campaign. They've had a victory. They've had a serious defeat. They've resolved that and had a subsequent victory. And then they stop. And they stop to follow some former instructions, as Moses had formerly instructed them. And so there's a background to the passage. And that background is in the book of Deuteronomy. As they were about to enter the promised land, Moses, their leader who had led them out of Egypt, gathers the people and begins to prepare them for this next phase of life. And in Deuteronomy, he gives them instructions which are wound into this passage. And so I'm going to take a few minutes and just take you through some of those passages, some of the background. The first thing Joshua does is he builds an altar. He built it according to what is written in the book of the law of Moses, an altar of uncut stones on which no iron tool had been used. And in Deuteronomy 27, that's what Moses had commanded. In Deuteronomy 27, verses 1 to 8, and I'm going to read this. I'm going to take a couple of minutes just to read these passages to help us see that this wasn't just an accident. This was intentional on Joshua's part, on the leader's part, to say, we're going to stop and do this. Joshua 27, 1 to 8. Moses and the elders of Israel commanded the people, keep all these commands that I give you today. When you have crossed the Jordan into the land your God is giving you, set up some large stones and coat them with plaster. Write on them all the words of this law when you have crossed over to enter the land the Lord your God is giving you, a land flowing with milk and honey, just as the Lord, the God of your ancestors, promised you. And when you have crossed the Jordan, set up these stones on Mount Ebal, as I command you today, and coat them with plaster. Build there an altar to the Lord your God, an altar of stones. Do not use any iron tool on them. Build the altar of the Lord your God with field stones and offer burnt offerings on it to the Lord your God. Sacrifice fellowship offerings there, eating them and rejoicing in the presence of the Lord your God. And you shall write very clearly all the words of this law on these stones that you have set up. Moses had called them to that. Moses sort of describes this with a sense of urgency. When you get in, right away, make sure that you do this. Make sure that you build an altar. Make sure that you offer an offering. Make sure that you have fellowship offerings. This is completely my culture imposed on the Bible, but a fellowship offering is sort of a big barbecue. You gather the people and you fellowship. And that always means food, right? Like, we're going to have fellowship after. And there's food, and that's human, and that's proper, and it's good. And then in Deuteronomy it says, rejoice in the presence of the Lord your God. This isn't just somber. Oh, it's serious. But it's a rejoicing. It's who is our God. Write the law and celebrate God together. That's what you do when you get in the land. Because distractions will come. You will have crops to grow, land to farm, houses to build, children to raise, jobs to go to. You will get consumed with life. And so stop. Identify who your God is. Give offerings. Identify what rules your life. Write out the law. Celebrate together. And so that's what Joshua does. They've started the process of entering the land. And Joshua says, wait a minute. We've got something to do first. We have to reaffirm who our God is. And so he takes the instructions of Moses and he says, let's build an altar. And let's give a burnt offering. And let's sacrifice fellowship offerings. And in Joshua, we're not told that it was a rejoicing, but that's implied. That's there. They stop life and they worship. They eat together. and they say, our God is calling the shots. We are not in charge. We submit to this God. And then in Joshua, there's this suggestion of an antiphonal chorus. All the Israelites with their elders and officials were standing on both sides of the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, facing the priests who carried the Ark. Half of the people stood in front of Mount Gerizim and half in front of Mount Ebal, as Moses, the servant of the Lord, had formerly commanded. Deuteronomy 27:9-14. Go back. And Moses had gone on. We'll start at verse 12. When you have crossed the Jordan, this is Deuteronomy 27, these tribes shall stand on Mount Gerizim to bless the people. And the six tribes are listed. And these tribes shall stand on Mount Ebal to pronounce curses. And then skip to 14. The Levites shall recite to all the people of Israel in a loud voice, and there's curses. And Moses sets up this idea of two groups of people. One of whom says, if we obey, here is the blessings promised to us. The other of whom says, if we disobey, here's the curses that we call upon ourselves. And they go back and forth. 2 summers ago, I was at Meadow Lodge Bible Camp at a campfire. And there was this rowdy group of counselors who decided to share their rowdiness with all of us around the campfire, which has never happened before at camp. And they started into these antiphonal songs, antiphonal meaning back and forth. And it starts with, there ain't no flies on us. There might be flies on some of you guys, but there ain't no fly. And it comes back a little bit louder. And it comes back a little bit stronger. And then it goes back and forth. And then they launched into other antiphonal songs. And there was this energy that comes into the group that has no useful output whatsoever. But, except the kids might sleep later. But there's something in this back and forth. Moses says, talk to each other. Tell each other in loud, united voices of the blessings and the curses. Make your choices obvious. And Joshua does it. And the account in Joshua tells us about the blessings. It says they repeated the blessings. Because there was two groups of people, one in front of one man and one in front of the other, we assume that there was also curses, but Joshua, the book, is a positive book. It's telling us about the victory, and it says, ah, there's blessings. And implied is, and the curses are there too. But they stop. They're doing this military campaign, and they stop to build an altar. And they stop to tell each other the truth about who their God is. And they're bodily acting out what they believe. They're doing something with their bodies. They're building altars. They're seeing, experiencing, hearing, smelling offerings. All of those things are in offerings. You see, you smell, you hear, you taste. And it's a full involvement. Who is our God? And they're reinforcing who they're following. They were a slave people. They did what the Egyptians did. They just lived life. And now God has said, come and be different. And when they enter the land, Joshua stops them and says, we have to remember who our God is. We have to reinforce with our whole bodies what we follow. We stand in church when we gather. We stand to worship. You know, it's not just because you sing louder or better that way. It's not just to keep you awake. It's partly because I have to do things physically to listen to the words, to feel the truth. And our bodies have to be involved. The other reference that probably is worth you checking is Deuteronomy 11:26, where this same blessings and curses thing is given by Moses. And in that incident, there's this strong emphasis on loving the Lord and on fearing the Lord. And then in Deuteronomy 30, so that was Deuteronomy 11. Deuteronomy 30, just one more briefly, verses 11 to 20. And I will read these again. And this is a call to faithfulness. As Moses is giving these instructions, and this is part of what's in Joshua's mind as they stop to build this altar. Moses says this in Deuteronomy 30, verse 11. Now, what I am commanding you today is not too difficult for you or beyond your reach. It's not up in heaven so that you have to ask, who will go to heaven to get it and proclaim it to us so we may obey it? Nor is it beyond the sea so that you have to ask, who will cross the sea to get it and proclaim it to us so that we may obey it? No, the word is very near you. It is in your mouth and in your heart, so you may obey it. See, I set before you today life and prosperity, death and destruction. For I command you today to love the Lord your God, to walk in obedience to him, and to keep his commands, decrees, and laws. Then you will live and increase, and the Lord your God will bless you in the land you are entering to possess. But if your heart turns away and you are not obedient, and if you are drawn away to bow down to other gods and worship them, I declare to you this day that you will certainly be destroyed. You will not live long in the land you are crossing the Jordan to enter and possess. This day I call the heavens and the earth as witnesses against you that I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Now choose life so that you and your children may live, and that you may love the Lord your God, listen to his voice, and hold fast to him. For the Lord is your life, and he will give you many years in the land he swore to give to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And this is a call to faithfulness, because they, like I, will forget. I'm setting before you choices, but make sure you do something to remember. And so Joshua, when they enter the land, stops and says, we have to remember who our God is. And so they build the altar. They offer the sacrifices. And then he reads the law. And it's this recommitment, reenactment, us saying, I am going to have this God as my God. I am going to let him rule my life. There was not a word of all that Moses had commanded that Joshua did not read to the whole assembly of Israel, including the women and children and the foreigners who lived among them. And in Deuteronomy 31, Moses had commanded that every 7 years they stop and the people all gather in one place and they read the law together. And Joshua starts their time in the land that way. They've had a victory and a loss. And Joshua says, let's remember who we belong to. Let's remember who we follow. Let's remember who our God is. And sometimes it's worth us saying, why? Why would they do this? Why stop and worship? Why stop and honor God? Why stop and recognize at this point who the king of the people is? There's reasons for their actions. And we can't necessarily know, but here's the speculation. Humans are fickle. I'll forget my hiking trip. I need a memory marker. I'll forget my commitment tonight. I need to be told it's there. I need my calendar to remind me. Well, I'll forget who's the boss, who my God is, who I'm serving. I'll wander, and I need a reminder. And so they gather and have a community time saying, this is who our God is. Intention in discipleship is not enough. Intending to follow Jesus, intending to be obedient, intending to worship isn't the same as following Jesus, being obedient, worshiping. And so they stop and they mark themselves, because we're prone to forget. I love the line from the hymn, as do many of you, I'm sure. Prone to wander, Lord, I feel it. Prone to leave the God I love. Here's my heart. Take and seal it. Seal it for thy courts above. Prone to wander. I'm going to wander away. So I need a marker. I need a reminder. And one of the things Moses said to them is, every 7 years, stop and read the whole law. Because you'll wander and you'll forget. And so how do we maintain this commitment? How do we maintain our relationship with this God who invites us to be his and to serve? Because we're in the same position. It's not that we're entering a new land, but it's that we too face distractions and rabbit trails and sidetracks, and we lose who our God is. And we're not going to gather and build an altar. But what are we going to do to maintain our relationship with God? How do I keep myself alert to who my God is in the daily humdrum of life? How do I make sure that I remember who my God is? And I think there's some key ideas here. And one is obedience. Part of the reason I felt like it was important that we read from Deuteronomy as we look at Joshua is that Joshua is obeying. Joshua, the man, the leader, is saying, this is what Moses said, this is what we're going to do. Joshua, the book of the Bible, is telling us obedience matters. And I maintain my relationship with God by submitting, which is pretty close to obeying. I do what I know, and I practice it. And there's a power to obeying without question. Joshua led in obedience. This is what I know, and this is what we're going to do. So I submit my choice and my desires. I don't want to speak kind words about that person that didn't pay for the work I did. But I can choose to obey. I can choose to submit. I don't want to honor the leaders of my country. I don't think I'm supposed to go here, right? But I can, and I can choose to, and I can give up my opinions because someone else's opinion matters too. Sometimes I have to lose to Jesus to keep Jesus as the boss. Sometimes Jesus has to call the shot. So I got this thing in my head a few weeks ago that I should buy a new truck. Well, what it really was I wanted to go to Ritchie Brothers Auction, because for years I've driven by Ritchie Brothers Auction on the highway there at Nisku, and I've always been working when Ritchie Brothers Auction is on, and hey, I don't have a job. So I went to Ritchie Brothers Auction, and then Ritchie Brothers Auctions had pickup trucks, and well, I could use a pickup truck, and that would be cool. And so then I go to the auction, but at Ritchie Brothers Auction, you're buying against people from New Brunswick, Utah, and Washington State, so there's no deals there. So then there was another auction, because now I've got it in my head, I've got to have a new truck. So I go to Michener Allen Auctions on the subsequent Saturday, and I'm looking at these trucks, and I'm thinking, man, you know, should I buy? You know, like, God, is this a wise choice? And I very clearly felt like, don't buy a truck. And I thought, like, I don't know, I'm not good at this touchy-feely stuff. But I felt like God said, don't buy a truck. 10 minutes later, perfect truck comes on the auction block. It's sold for $900. And I kept my hands right where they are now. Because I had to lose to Jesus. I could have sold it. I could have just made a profit. Like, I wasn't going to keep it, God. I was just going to, sort of like Jericho, right? No, sometimes I have to lose to Jesus. And I keep God in control when I choose to obey, just because I choose to obey. And maybe there's no other rational reason. Shoot, maybe that's the whole reason God told me not to buy a truck, because I needed to practice not doing my own thing. Like, maybe there's no greater truck coming along, you know, because that's my rationalizing. But I just need to lose to Jesus. I've said to people over the years, you need to crash into Jesus, and you need to get some damage. Like, you need to lose the fight, the collision. Because I need to submit, and I need to let Jesus win. And so Joshua obeys, and he models for the people, and he calls the people to obedience. We're going to stop, and we're going to build an altar, and you're going to listen to me read the law. How exciting is that? Because that's what our God says. But I think the second thing here matters, and that's that celebration is important. What I celebrate becomes more important to me. I celebrate my birthday, and all of a sudden I care about my birthday more. But in cultures where they don't celebrate their birthday, they don't care about birthdays. Who cares when you were born? Korea, everybody has their birthday on the first day of the year. We're all, happy birthday, everybody. But we've said, oh no, your birthday matters. We're at this individualistic culture, and you are important, which you are. But so is everybody beside you. Therefore, our birthdays become more important. This is a memorable occasion where there is sight and sound and smell, and you start to say, oh, this matters. And sometimes in life, we have to stop and say, this matters. And so here you are on a Sunday morning. This matters. I get up in the morning and I say, am I just going to get on with my day? Or am I going to stop and spend time with God and say, this matters? I'm about 50% on that one. But I have to remind myself, what I celebrate becomes more important to me. What I give centrality to grows in importance. We value July 1st because we celebrate Canada Day. And July 2nd isn't central at all. But we only value Canada in some degree, to some degree, because we stop to celebrate it. And what we celebrate becomes more important. And so when we gather on Sunday, we are involved in this act of saying, this matters. Faith matters. Jesus matters. And I will make this more important in my life. And other things will have to fall to the side because this matters. And my day's activities might have to fall to the side for a few moments while I stop and spend time with the Father. Because I'm marking myself. And I'm saying, I'm not in charge. God is. And I want him to be in charge. And so I celebrate. And so we build rituals into our lives to remind ourselves what is important. We make celebrations that mark God's work. I've been connected to Bethel Bible Camp over the years, and they celebrated their 70th. Well, when you stop and celebrate their 70th, you say, this matters. Camp matters. God's work at camp matters. I was involved with Mount Carmel's 50th last year. This matters. God's work at Mount Carmel matters. But if we just carry on without marking those occasions, Bethel Bible Camp matters less. Balmoral Bible Chapel matters less. So we build rituals into our lives to remind us of what's important. I've told you this before, but sometimes I've gone into Walmart at 7 in the morning. Have you ever been in Walmart when they open? They have this little employee circle. And I haven't seen this for a few years. It may have changed. Part of me hopes it has. But they gather, and someone tells the employees, here's what matters today. Customers first, and they have a list of things. Here's the amount of money our store took in yesterday. I stood down the aisle and listened to this. I really have. And here's what our target is for today. And then they do a little cheer because it matters that the employees value Walmart. Some of you might work at Walmart. You're free to correct my crass generalization. But that's what they do. Guess what? I need to remind myself who my God is and why I follow him. And I need to do it regularly because I forget. And I need to do it in community. The kids in Joshua's world are there. This isn't just the adults. This is the whole community. The kids didn't experience in the same way the things that happened in Egypt. They didn't experience in the same way the thing that happened in the wilderness. And they need to be reminded of what the community stands for, who the community follows. I celebrate the Lord, and I keep the Lord central by celebrating His faithfulness. I keep the Lord central by obeying Him. And I choose to do those things. And that is relationship maintenance. That's how I maintain my connection. We spend a lot of time as Christians in the last 10 or 15 years, particularly worrying about how do we pass faith on to the next generation. And it's a worthy discussion. But one of the things is we need to model celebration. And we need to model obedience. And we need to say, here's why I do what I do. And our kids pick up on that and our kids see it. And that carries weight. So we maintain our relationship with God by remembering that He's in charge. And we obey as Joshua led the people to obey. We celebrate God's faithfulness. And we gather and we mark occasions. Because what we celebrate will grow in importance to us. So the people walk away from this day. And maybe these days, Joshua read the whole law. And they're a little more certain of who they follow, of who's in charge. And their kids are a little more certain of who they are and of their identity as people of God. And they're going to wander again. And so Moses has said to them in Deuteronomy 31, every 7 years, read the law. Three times every year, part of the law is three times every year you go and you gather in Jerusalem, and there's other markers. But I need reminded. And so church matters. Coming here on a Sunday matters. Not because I walk away and say, oh, I was so well fed, or oh, I really like that song. I hope that's true. But it matters because I am making a choice about what is important, and that reinforces the centrality of my commitment to Jesus Christ. And it is an act of obedience. And then we recommit ourselves regularly to who our God is. Because I am prone to wander. And I'm prone to forget hikes. And I'm prone to forget commitments. And so I, along with all of humanity, have to mark myself. If Jesus is Lord of my life, how am I going to keep myself submitting to Him? Let's pray. Father, we glibly handle Scripture, but it has power. And I ask that You'd give us strength to obey and to celebrate You, to be people who are willing to submit ourselves and willing to honor. And so this week, help us to be alert to the ways in which we can obey You and the ways in which we can give You value and express value, the value that You have to us. Be amongst us as we gather for lunch. Help us to encourage, build up, and share Your life with each other. Pray these things in Your name. Amen.